Good morning, planet Earth. Good morning to the hippopotamus kings. Good morning to the various realms of the ancient oceans. Good morning to the continents and the subcontinents. Good morning to the little fishies that live in the lake. Good morning to the insects that they eat. Good morning to the starshine and the glow shine and all the crazy things that came from the 1960s. It is May the 29th, 2022, Bo Blimp Talk, right around, I don't know, 6 a.m. Mountain Standard Time, Sunday, here in the great state of Utah. We are connected, we are reflected, we are understanding, and we live within the structure of Gondor. We expect the coming of the hairless French bulldog pretty soon, rising up out of the Great Salt Lake. Great bulldog, come save us. Great bulldog, come for us. Great bulldog, you can save us from the flame. It is morning time for all of you. It's time to awaken, hairless bulldog Frenchie in the Great Salt Lake. It's time for you to wake up. It's time for you to stir the shit. It's time for you to smell the coffee. It's time for you to get up, baby. Because I gotta tell you, the clock tolls for everybody, right? Or is it the bell? For whom the bell tolls? The bell tolls for everybody. And that bell is ringing. And if you have eyes to see and ears to hear, you can sense what's going on, pal. But you don't have to. One of the best ways to head into the world, if you don't want to feel pain or sorrow, is without a brain, without a soul. Just like a rocket. Heading from pain to pleasure. That's how you live it, right, buddy? That's how you survive in this place, right, pal? You just have to go from pain to pleasure or pleasure to pain, right? Yeah, I've had pretty much a disquiet of the soul of recent, and it may not be so recent. In 2019, I kind of had a few moments where I realized that even if it wasn't true for other people, it was at least true for me that my life and my world was going to change radically. And it's not like it'd been stable. I've been a rolling stone in some ways my whole life. I certainly don't fit into the career track professionals of ancient times or modern times. And I don't really give a shit any longer. You know, if we're heading towards the great, what I call the infinite gray nothing, which I don't think is feasible, not if there's a God. But if there is no God, then we could be heading towards the infinite gray nothing or some version of it. And when I say some version of it, it only has to last longer than my consciousness. If there is no God, if I were an atheist, I only have to experience reality until I'm dead. And then it's over. Period. Gone. Finito. Done. Dunzo, right? I talk about the great discontinuity a lot because I believe that's what's going on. But I also know that there is a bias that exists in all reasoning towards outcomes that we desire. I mean, this is not... It's not a new concept. It's not a new idea. It's in all the stories going back to the very, very beginning times. People often see what they want to see. And so as a rational person, I have to look in the mirror and say, are you seeing something that is happening or are you seeing what you want to see? And that's a good question. Because the infinite gray nothing is more or less the status quo in creepy incremental ways becoming more and more pointless and empty. I wrote a book about this in 2015 called Morny Dreck. And in essence, the theme of the book is really quite simple, is that the post-scarcity world of hyper-technology might actually suck worse than this one in its own special way. And one of the things that may make it suck more or be just a terribly shitty future is the idea that people won't even have words or concepts or notions of anything that doesn't fit rather bleakly into the paradigm they are given. Which means that in this post-scarcity future, if it's all about shoving stuff down your mouth pipe, and if it's all about living as long as you can with as much pleasure as you can, if that's all there is to it, then there's nothing. There's nothing. There is no God. There is no soul. And we really are just tapeworms. I mean, at the end of the day, you plop a human being on a planet. You've got the planet has a tapeworm. And if the planet is lucky, it'll live with that tapeworm until the very moment that it can no longer live. And that's what the human race is in Morny Dreck. Tapeworms. Parasites. Pieces of shit. Crap heads. That's not really a world I want to head towards, but that is a world you can head towards. And the thing about when I say crap heads, these could be the smartest crap heads ever in terms of processing power and coming up with creative solutions to everyday problems. We're not talking about idiocracy here. We're actually just talking about soulless people going from pain, you know, to pleasure every fucking day, and that's all there is to it. And there's nothing else. Nothing. Even the concept of freedom doesn't really mean a lot in this world because everybody kind of lives in their own pleasure box, a version of the Skinner box, and it just sort of works. And it works for them. They don't even have a notion of the questions to ask. There are no more questions because everything is perfect. In that material sense, everything is just perfect. But, and I gotta take care of something here real quick. Sorry about that. Get all OCD about weird noises because my equipment is shit. That's why I say that if it is the infinite gray nothing, if all the people afraid of the World Economic Federation, Foundation, whatever, formation, if you're afraid of Klaus Schwab and the Reset and the New World Order, if you live with bugbears created by Alex Jones that wander your brain every day, then maybe you're right. Maybe it is heading towards the one world whatever. And if you're a Christian, maybe that fits into your end times theory. I have no idea. I really don't. I don't. I'm not a prophet. I can't predict the future. And even though I'm willing to posit the atheistic cosmology, I'm not an atheist. There's too many forms of what I would call absurd existential evidence that's occurred in my life for me to be an atheist any longer. It isn't to say that I don't question God sometimes. I question God. I shake my fist at God a lot, especially these days. I shake my fist wondering, when, oh Lord, are you going to return? You know, and not for my sake, because I think I'm a pitiable creature, a piece of shit most of the time. It's more for just the sake of the human race. When are you going to return? You know, what are you waiting for? And I have to remind myself, it is not my job or my obligation or my choice to control the timeline. It's going to happen as it happens. You know, one of the really, truly messed up things that happened back in 2016 and continued through 2020 were all these weird freaks that came out of the woodwork claiming the Bible predicted Donald Trump. And of all the wretchedly, like, irreligious, disrespectful, I would even say in some ways heretical things to do, to take the Bible, to take any of the prophecy in the Bible and connect it to that piece of shit, to me is like saying, fuck you, God. You know, you might as well say, fuck you, God. If you're going to connect Donald Trump to anything in Christianity, you might as well just say, fuck you, God. Or just be an atheist. Because clearly you're using the Bible for purposes that it has no connection to. The Bible does not predict presidential elections. For the main reason, how can I put this, there really is no choice in your election. It's a predetermined thing. So the Bible doesn't do it for all sorts of reasons, not the least of which is there's no chance involved. You can figure this shit out on your own. Who's going to win more or less? But you can't think of it in terms of democracy. You have to think of it in terms of the Worldwide Wrestling Federation or whatever. Now, I've been in a pretty dark place in the last few days, and I don't really have a simple way out. I use prayer when I can, but my prayers have a kind of a saccharine, even a bitterness to them at this point. I don't have a good way to pray for things I don't believe in. You know, I can't really pray for an evil system. The system is evil. I'm not going to pray for it. I'm not going to pray the bankers do better. I kind of hope all the bankers burn in hell at this point. Even the people at the lowest levels, because at this point, I don't care if you're the low-level hospital person or the low-level banker. You ought to know what you're involved in. And if you don't know, then the shock will be yours just as it will be for every other sinner throughout history. You know, this is a crooked system, but does that mean it can't last? Who knows how long it can last? It's lasted my whole fucking life. It can probably last another 100 years, maybe, right? That's if the laws of thermodynamics don't apply. And that's also if, basically, you know, there is no God. And if you can hear that pitter-patter from outside my window showing up on the recorder, well, that's just the pitter-patter of artificially generated rain, and I think maybe even some frozen rain and some hail. And that also means you shouldn't drink it or eat it, but at this point you're breathing it in. Every carrot, every tomato you eat, you're taking in this shit. It's in everything. It is. It's in the air you breathe, it's in the water you drink, it's in the food you eat. The stuff they spray from the sky ends up in your fucking food. And I don't care who you are or how special you think you are. You are just as polluted as I am at this point, really. To tell you. I have encountered more and more examples of censorship in my life and the lives of others, and I don't know what to say. I have people in my life that are gaslighting me. Thankfully, not people that live here with me right now, not the people in this house, but other people gaslighting me. And I don't know why they do it. I really don't. Do they think I don't know what's going on? I do. I just don't fucking care. At this point, the United States government probably wastes billions upon billions of dollars every fucking year fucking with people, just to keep them outside of the system, just to keep them under control, just to keep their voice from being heard. They fuck with a lot of people, and I'm small potatoes. I'm nothing. I'm not even big enough to be known before I'm censored. You know, someone will go on Zero Hedge and complain about some famous person being banned from YouTube. But I was being banned from YouTube and I'm not famous. So exactly how do you ever be known to have been banned if you're not in that position in the first place? And the answer is the people that are known to be banned are more or less banned on purpose. They're banned so you know who they are. If Jack Prosobiec or whoever the fuck he is gets kicked out of Davos, he gets kicked out of Davos in a public way people take pictures, if only the alt press. And I promise you, his YouTube videos don't end up being banned forever. He'll post them someplace else. That's just how it works in that reality. And I don't know, should I be bitter about that? Why would I be? Why should you be? What we're looking at is the meat grinder of history, and it doesn't give a fuck who you are. It doesn't give a fuck about your age. It doesn't care about the color of your skin. And when it gets really hungry, it ends up just eating everybody, including babies. So if you're asking me, does it matter? The answer is no. What I really wish is I had enough money to just ride this motherfucker out. At this point, you know, in 2020, I estimated 20K, and that was an underestimate. I probably should have said 60 to 80. But if at this point, if I had about $30,000, I think I could ride this out right until the end. Right until the probability curve hits me in the face. I don't think it's the end of the world, but I do think the end of many people's worlds is upon us. I think a lot of people are going to end up dying, and it won't be the 1 million or the 6 million bogus COVID deaths that they've calculated based upon hospital malpractice. No, it won't be that. It'll be a lot more, and no one will be left to bury you. Like, that'll be a situation for a lot of people. You'll be just dead someplace. Nobody's going to bury you. And we're almost there already. Believe me. We are almost at the point already where bodies will simply be dumped. And we haven't even seen the main event yet. We're not even there yet. We're still a few miles away down the road. Yeah, I wish I had enough money just to write it out. And wishes don't make anything come true. I'll probably end up taking some type of a job here pretty soon. Hopefully it'll be a job that gets me through till the very, very end of whatever this is right now. And if all of a sudden it turns out we're in the infinite gray nothing, basically like being, in the film Invasion of the Body Snatchers, the original, if that's where we're at, and that's all there is to it, then I don't know what to say, folks. That is not a world predicted by the Bible or prophecy. There's no prophecy that matches that. Now, if it's part of the 7 years, if it's part of the end times, maybe it does match, but I just don't know, folks. I don't know what to believe at this point. I have faith in God, and more or less everything else I have zero faith in. I don't have any faith that the information I get from the news is true. And that includes Zero Hedge. That includes every alt site you send a link to me for. I have motherfuckers sending me links about Barbie's junk and all kinds of weird other issues around men and women competing against each other. And I just don't fucking care. All of that is nonsense at this point. It is. It's nonsense. People don't realize it yet, but they will. I get people sending me links about mortgage fraud. Well, gee whiz, 2007's calling. I get all kinds of fucking links about this and that. Oh, Dan, it's gonna be, you're all gonna live in pods and eat worms. If you're lucky, buddy. If you're lucky. That's what you'll end up there. You'll end up there, and maybe you'll reason yourself out of a box, but that's not very likely. What is more likely is either A, all of that's never going to happen, or B, if it does happen, it'll be the subtle control system that's always been there. It won't be worms. It won't be any of the things you think it will be. They'll scare you into the box, and then they'll give you cake. They probably will, for whatever group of people ends up in the fucking box. Or they'll turn worms in the cake, right? You're afraid of things that probably will never happen, and you're unafraid of things that are happening already. And maybe that applies to all of us. That applies to me. That applies to you. We are afraid of things that will never fucking happen, and we are completely ignorant of the beast right at the door. How is that not an ancient story? How is that not common? This is a reading from Judges 5, the Song of Deborah. On that day, Deborah and Barak, son of Abinoam, sang this song. When the princes in Israel take the lead, when the people willingly offer themselves, praise the Lord. Hear this, you kings, listen, you rulers. I, even I, will sing to the Lord. I will praise the Lord, the God of Israel, in song. When you, Lord, went out from Seir, when you marched from the land of Edom, the earth shook, the heavens poured, the clouds poured down water, the mountains quaked before the Lord, the one of Sinai, before the Lord, the God of Israel. In the days of Shamgar, son of Anath, in the days of Jael, the highways were abandoned. The travelers took the winding paths. Villagers in Israel would not fight. They held back until I, Deborah, arose. Until I arose, a mother in Israel. God chose new leaders. God chose new leaders. When war came to the city gates, but not a shield or spear was seen among 40,000 in Israel. My heart is with Israel's princes, with the willing volunteers among the people. Praise the Lord. You who ride on white donkeys, sitting on your saddle blankets, and you who walk along the road, consider the voice of the singers at the watering places. They recite the victories of the Lord, the victories of his villagers in Israel. Then the people of the Lord went down to the city gates. Wake up, Deborah. Wake up, break out in song. Arise, Barak, take captive your captives, son of Abinoam. The remnant of the nobles came down. The people of the Lord came down to me against the mighty. Some came from Ephraim, whose roots were in Amalek. Benjamin was with the people who followed you. From Machir, captains came down. From Zebulun, those who bear a commander's staff. The princes of Issachar were with Deborah. Yes, Issachar was with Barak, sent under his command into the valley. In the district of Reuben, there was much searching of heart. Why did you stay among the sheep pens to hear the whistling for the flocks? In the districts of Reuben, there was much searching of heart. Gilead stayed beyond the Jordan. And Dan, why did he linger by the ships? I can tell you. Asher remained on the coast and stayed in his coves. The people of Zebulun risked their very lives. So did Naphtali on the terrace fields. Kings came, they fought. The kings of Canaan fought at Tanakh by the waters of Megiddo. They took no plunder of silver. From the heavens, the stars fought. From their courses, they fought against Sisera. The river Kishon swept them away. The age-old river, the river of Kishon. March on, my soul, be strong. Then thundered the horse's hooves. Galloping, galloping go his mighty steeds. Curse Meroz, said the angel of the Lord. Curse its people bitterly, because they did not come to help the Lord, to help the Lord against the mighty. Most blessed women be Jael, the wife of Heber the Kenite, most blessed of tent-dwelling women. He asked for water, she gave him milk. In a bowl fit for nobles, she brought him curdled milk. Her hand reached for the tent peg, her right hand for the workman's hammer. She struck Sisera, she crushed his head, she shattered and pierced his temple. At her feet he sank, he fell, there he lay. At her feet he sank, he fell, where he sank, there he fell, dead. Through the window peered Sisera's mother. Behind the lattice she cried out, "Why is his chariot so long in coming? Why is the clatter of his chariots delayed?" The wisest of her ladies answer her. Indeed, she keeps saying to herself, "Are they not finding and dividing the spoils, a woman for two, or two for each man? Colorful garments as plunder for Sisera, colorful garments embroidered, highly embroidered garments for my neck, all this is plunder. So may all your enemies perish, Lord, but may all those who love you be like the sun when it rises in its strength." Then the land had peace for 40 years. This is the word of the Lord. Judges 5. The land had peace for 40 years. If you ever read the book of Judges, you'll find something out that's interesting. About every 40 years, the chosen people turn from God, it seems like. I mean, it's basically one of those situations where they're caught in a cycle. And it's, I think it's been called the cycle of apostasy, but ultimately, it's not an old cycle. It's a cycle that recurs very often. If you ask me, many of the churches that call themselves churches today are not acting in a way that the Lord in heaven would want them to act. That doesn't mean I get to judge them, but it does mean that these old cycles don't end. And you could argue that we're in another cycle, that what's going on right now might be that simple, that in fact, when you look around at the decay, when you look around at the way in which people have dehumanized each other, when you look around at the fact that it seems like we've decided to poison each other and poison the world to death, then it's not that surprising that this cycle repeats itself. It's not that surprising because you can see it. And I don't know if the answer is, well, ergo, everyone turns to the Lord. That's never really been totally true. Enough people turn to God. Enough people change. But it's never really been the case that everybody does. It's the case that enough people do. And that changes the world, really. It changes the way that the Lord sees the world. But if these are the end times, I mean, if these are the absolute end times, then the 40 years doesn't apply. What we're looking at is the final story. And I don't know what that's going to be because, frankly, I don't feel comfortable telling you the meaning of the book of Revelation. I don't feel comfortable explaining to you all the prophecy. I can give you my own perspective on a few issues, but that's all. I can't help you beyond that. And I would even argue that it's all of our jobs to be considering those issues, but if you're looking to one person to tell you the meaning of the Bible, then my suggestion is you should pray. There is a person that will help you. There is the Holy Spirit and there is Jesus Christ. So if you're willing to pray, you can get help on the meaning of that book. But if you're looking for a bishop or a priest to help you at this point, you might be lost. And I'm sorry. You might be lost. You might be out of contact with the meaning of the book, not because the book is not there, but because you've turned to another person to tell you what it means and not to the Lord. Part of the cycle of apostasy is giving authority to earthly entities, earthly structures, when in fact that authority is the Lord's. It's like the debate over things like abortion or sexuality or any of these issues. There's a simple solution if you're a Christian, and that is, it's none of your business. You should be allowed to live in peace as you can in whatever community you can find. And it's up to you to build that community, okay? If you're looking for a shiny king, I suggest you go to 1 Samuel chapter 8 and stop right there. Okay, it is up to you to build a community. The government's not going to do it for you. Psychologists are not going to do it for you. The TV or the internet is not going to build a community for you. If you want to build a community, it's up to you to do so. Okay, but it's not going to magically happen. There's nothing in this in-between world, the world between Eden and the kingdom, there is nothing that magically happens without the hand of God. And I don't know how to put this to you, but miracles are rare. And miracles are rare for different reasons, but they're certainly rare in part because I don't think the Lord just does them willy-nilly. I think the Lord has a plan for why the Lord uses a miracle. So you really have to believe, if you're living part of this satanic existence that currently is part of Americana, you really have to believe that the Lord likes it, that the Lord approves of it. Or rather, maybe the better answer is, if you don't like it, build your own community. That's the answer. If you don't like the abortion issues or the issues around sexuality, stop with the voting. Stop with the I'm a Republican or I'm a Democrat. If you don't like the fact that the chemical plant's poisoning the river, stop praying to the EPA. The EPA is not going to help you. It's not going to help you with the poisoners. It really, really won't. But a community can. A community, a real community, can do something. Next topic. So one of the oldest stories, if you ask me, in all culture, but again, I'm not a cultural anthropologist, so, you know, I'm just a hobo, so take it with a grain of salt. But probably one of the oldest stories in culture is the story of exile. Exile. Being chased from where you live. Leaving your past behind. If you believe what you're told about the history, the natural history of this planet, which means that the beginnings of life on this planet go back maybe, you know, almost a billion years. Who knows? If you believe what you're told. But sometime in the last half a billion, maybe the last 300 million, sometime in the last 500 to 600 million years, some creatures started crawling out of the primordial sea. They got on the land, they started to grow hair, they opened up breweries, they learned to smoke cigarettes, and then one day, as chimpanzees, they looked back upon the swamp they left behind and they said to themselves, there's no going back. They picked up a picture of a salamander or a salamander freak or some amphibian called Old Uncle Grebus. It's an ancient picture from their perspective, but they pick it up and they show their kids and they say, there's no going back, kids. We don't get to go back to those wonderful oceans with those giant shrimp things that would eat us every day. No going back. When you are born, you're exiled. You spend some time in the womb. You spend right there time in the womb. Like Adam and Eve, you live in a kind of paradise. But then 9 months later, you are ejected into this world, and there is no accident that many of you cry. In fact, if you could, your first word would probably, if you could, your first word, if you could utter your first word upon leaving that orifice, being ejected into the world, the first word you might have uttered is fuck. How did I end up here? Why can't I go back? Why can't I go back to the nutrition and the peace and the warmth? Why can't I go back to that simplicity? Why did I end up here? How did it happen? Like some old muttering whiskey drunk in a bar, smelling of old stale cigarettes, staring into a glass, saying to himself or herself, how the fuck did I end up here? That is the sense of birth. As you grow up and you grow older, and I don't care what kind of deformed society you live in, our current society is very deformed when it comes to rites of passage, but as you grow older, as you grow up, you leave home, or some people get kicked out of home. Sometimes a home gets foreclosed on. Sometimes where you came from is a giant fucking crater. One day you're leaving home, you live in Syria, let's say it's the year 2018 Boblimtok, and you're leaving home, you're 18 years old, you're gonna go to college, maybe in Damascus. And as you walk away from your small town, you turn back and you see it destroyed by a bunch of firebombs. Courtesy Uncle Sam. Your home's gone. It's not just that there's no going home for you, buddy. It's gone. It's gone forever. Okay? And sometimes it's not that brutal, but for a lot of people it is. There are children who grow up abused. Okay? Physically, sexually, psychologically. That means that they never even had a fucking home. That means when they arrived in this world, they were immediately in the jungle. That means by definition, they are an exile. It is the oldest story, buddy. As you grow, as you change, as they say, as you respond to this world, as you get into collisions, as the skin or the covering that surrounds your soul gets more and more calloused, you become more and more of an exile. In fact, in some ways, that is the natural progression of every conscious being in the world. You get consciousness, you become aware of your situation, and then other people get upset with you and kick you out, and you become an exile. Well, not, no, pretty much almost every prophet I can think of in the Bible. Almost every prophet, Old and New Testament, every prophet, every disciple I can think of, pretty much almost everyone is an exile. In fact, Jesus pretty much wanted people to leave their families and their homes. We talked about this, I think, in a few podcasts ago, but Jesus went around and he pulled people out of their situations. Hey, you're a fisherman. Hey, you're a tax collector. Hey, you're a Roman centurion. Hey, you're a hooker. I want you to leave that life and leave everything it involves and follow me. Jesus created a lot of exiles. Jesus himself was an exile. He was exile from heaven when he was on earth. Okay? He was exiled from his fellow man, chased from when he was a baby as God and man. He was an exile in almost every sense. He was an exile. And he made it work, didn't he, though? Really. When you're in love with somebody, when you're in love with somebody or you have a friendship, a love or a friendship that turns and goes awry, that turns sour. You find yourself exiled from friends that you used to know. You find yourself exiled from relationships you used to have. You find yourself in exile. disasters happen throughout history, and I don't care if it's ancient or modern. Some disasters are so big that they act as bookmarks, or really bookends, really. And they're so bad that they're the bookend to a bunch of books that have been turned to dust. Some disasters are so big that for thousands of years of history, all you'll ever read is there were these people, they were here, they did some crazy stuff, and now they're gone. Disasters create exiles. Exiles from the past, exiles from the home, exiles from the culture, exiles on the run just to survive, just to exist, just to avoid the calamity. Disasters create a lot of exiles. We call them refugees, but refugees are exiles. If you choose power over God, and I don't know how to put this to you, pretty much any time you choose power, even if you claim to believe in God, you're choosing power over God. But if you choose power over God, you are an exile. In fact, in some ways, you're the worst kind, in the sense that not only are you an exile, which is a burden, but you're an exile heading in the wrong direction. Like Lucifer, for example. Okay? When you choose power and control over other people in any form, when you choose that over cooperation and liberty, when you threaten people and you put people in jails, when you decide to set yourself up as a king, when you choose to give to yourself the temporal powers that are reserved for God, you are an exile. You are exile from God. You are exile from man. You are in the darkest place you could possibly imagine. And you probably don't even know it, maybe. In fact, maybe that's the nature of a psychopath, really, or a sociopath. They are so far in exile, there is no way home. Power is exile. And then there is the ultimate exile in that earthly ecclesiastical sense. There's death. And in death, we leave people behind. But when you think about it, the real people in exile are not the people in the grave. The people in the grave have found their way home again. The people in exile at the funeral, the person in exile at the cemetery, isn't the dead body. When someone dies, the living are in exile. When someone is gone, the living are alone. They can't find that person because they're not home any longer, and they realize that person is them. It is the oldest story, if you ask my opinion. The oldest profession might be hooker, but the oldest story is the story of exile. It is. It is the story of life. It is the story of this middle world, this world of ours. Whether it's Abraham or Cain, Abraham was in exile, Cain was in exile. They don't have the same meaning in the context of the Bible in terms of, which side of the forest they're on, so to speak. But they are both in exile, okay? And if you say to yourself, well, that sounds terrible or something, exile's not all bad. Exile is kind of like an adventure, and that's what life should be, okay? When you understand your situation vis-a-vis the universe and God, you understand that there is no net, okay? There is no parachute. There is no button marked, save me. Because there is nothing in this physical world that can be saved. None of it. Your soul can be saved, okay? The souls of other brothers and sisters can be saved, but your 401k was never going to be saved. Even if you ended up using up every bit, you used up every bit. None of this stuff can be saved. Your classic cars can't be saved. Ray Kurzweil will indeed die. None of it can be saved. You can pile gold all you want to. You could have generations of people after you piling gold to make a gold mountain, And one day that gold will be gone too, all of it. None of this was ever going to be saved. All of it was going to go away. Everyone you know was always going to die, and you would always be on the run. Always. From the very moment you were thrown into the world, as I think Heidegger had once phrased it, till the very bitter end when that rock hits a wall. You are not going to save any of it, except for your soul. And if you don't believe in souls, and if you're an atheist, right, then none of it can be saved. So get over it. Accept your position as an exile. Be willing to drop everything at a minute's notice. Be ready to hear the word of the word of God. Be ready for that. When Yahweh speaks to you, be ready, because sometimes the Lord will say you need to leave. And he won't say it with words. He'll say it with symbols. He'll say it with omens. He'll say it in ways that are a little bit mysterious. But if the Lord tells you it's time for you to pack up your satchel and get on the road and leave everything else behind, be ready to do that. Because you, like me, like every other human being born into this world, you are an exile, and so am I. And when we find ourselves at home with the Lord in heaven, that's when we are out of exile. I have a quote from Dr. Freckles. Sometimes leaving the closet is the wrong answer, especially if you're being pulled out. Dr. Freckles. Now, what does that mean? Well, I've been thinking a lot on the, not specifically gender dysphoria, but the existential dysphoria of America. Because I don't really personally have a dog in the hunt of what two or more adults do voluntarily behind closed doors. I don't. I don't want a moral police. I don't want to wake up in a country like Iran. I don't frankly like the way the United States handles things. It doesn't mean I want to see people doing horrible things. That's why I said adults. That's why I said consenting. And preferably not brothers and sisters, and preferably no animals involved, right? But if that's what you're doing, if all you're doing is just having some kind of sex with other consenting adults who are not your family members, then I'd say, listen, it's not my business. It doesn't mean I think I can approve of you, but I'm not really sure you require my forgiveness, and it's not my business. I'm not interested. You should not be interested in what I do in the privacy of my own home in a free society, if you live in one. I don't know where they are any longer. And I'm not interested in what you do voluntarily with other adults in the privacy of your home. That's your business. Okay? There has been in my lifetime this philosophical position that if you're gay or lesbian or transgendered or something else, that the best thing for you to do is come out of the closet. Okay? The best thing for you to do is come out of the cave. And what I would tell you is that's half true. That's half true, all right? It's your choice what you want to do in your adulthood. It really is. If people tell you it's your duty to reveal any secret you have to other people, you need to tell them to fuck off, because that's also your choice. It is your choice to tell people if you're gay or lesbian or something else, and it's also equally your choice to keep it to yourself. And I can't tell you which is better or which is worse. You know, the airing of dirty laundry in this country has gotten so cringy that at a certain point you have to ask yourself, where are the limits? You know, what point do you draw the line? You know, when it comes to, for example, good old Uncle Dan's podcast, believe me, you don't have to listen. And the system does everything to make sure you don't. So I don't really worry about something cringy, I might say, because the audience size, you know, counts up to maybe like all my fingers and toes, right? That's about it. I don't think it's as simple as come out of the closet or not. I don't think it's as simple as being ashamed or not. Sometimes people are not ashamed. They simply like to keep their private business private. And I think you should respect that. I don't want to beat a dead horse on this one, but I think people have become overtly radical with respect to issues that are ultimately private, you know? I don't see any politics in what you do with your junk. I don't want to see it. I won't live around you if you show your junk off in public. I'll probably try to move. I mean, I'll get the fuck out one way or another, right? But it's your business what you want to do on your property in the privacy of your home. And beyond that, if you don't want people to know that you're gay or not, or lesbian or not, that's also your fucking business. It saddens me that people don't understand that's the way a free society works, but I don't think we know what a free society is any longer. So that's probably why we're at where we're at, right? Next topic. I have been more or less beating a dead horse recently regarding my Christianity and the Christianity of others, and that is the topic of churches and ministers and prophets. And I don't think I'm done beating this dead horse. I don't think the Lord in heaven likes us beating dead horses. But then this is a futile place, exile. This is a very futile place. So if you're getting obsessed with your situation right now, vis-a-vis your dead horse, understand that your horse was always going to die. Okay? So beating a dead horse doesn't help one way or another. I get Christians telling me, I need a special person for this and a special person for that. I need a pope. I need a bishop. I need a nun. I need a minister preacher type. I need a person in a special role because without that person in that special role, there would be no connection to God. And I would probably say to you, that's a problem. It is true throughout history, and that includes cultural history, there are characters called shaman. And it is true that there is a cultural continuity for all shaman within a specific culture. But is it the case that these shamans are necessarily part of a bureaucracy of shamans? Do they elect bishops of shamans and popes of shamans? And the answer is no. For that tribe, for that culture, for that microcosm of humanity, the shaman is their connection to nature, their connection to the universe. And if one day we become wise enough, we might find out their connection to God, ultimately. That's what the shaman is there for. But is it a specific job that somebody is given, or is it something that someone takes on as a role or an obligation? And if you ask yourself, how many shaman do you need? I would ask, how many of the people that are running this world into the ground do we have? Okay, we can use more than one. And if you're a Christian, it's more than just, do you need a shaman? If you're a Christian, the question is, do we need ministry? If you're a disciple of Christ, do you have a ministry? If you don't, then I have a hard time understanding how you're a disciple of Christ. I can say, to my credit at this point, that there are people in my life who, for good or for bad, I have impacted spiritually. And I would say positively, and in that sense, even if it's just a dozen people, I've tried to create a ministry. Our ministry obligation is not to create a televangelist channel. Our ministry obligation is not a way to mine or extract the resources of poor people. That is not a ministry. That's a grift. You know, one of the things about Martin Luther that you may or may not understand, especially if you're a Protestant, is that what he really was upset with in the Catholic Church wasn't primarily just its doctrinal behaviors, but the fact that it was a grift. That the Catholic Church came up with indulgences as a way to grift people out of money. Here, you give us some money, and we say a prayer, and your relative gets out of purgatory sooner, right? They can't say hell. They never went that far. I think at some point the popes would have said that. Like, they would have said, you know what? What if we grifted people on a deeper level and we said, giving us gold gets your relative out of hell? Of course, you know, that would be pretty much opposed to everything, because that would be putting the church as God. But hey, you know, what about purgatory, right? A few bucks here, a few bucks there, your relatives can get out of purgatory. And I don't even believe in purgatory. It's kind of a pagan thing, a Roman thing, that has very little to do with Christ. Well, nothing to do with Christ. If you say it's not your job to be a warrior for God, then I would say you should read the Song of Deborah. If you say it's not your job to be a prophet of God, I say read about Elijah and read the Bible and ask questions and pray on the meaning of prophecy. If you say it's your job not to be a minister, I say look around you. In your home, in your community, your neighbors, people walking down the street. If you say it's not your job to be a minister, my response to that would be, you have a ministry. You just haven't, you know, done anything about it yet. If you say, well, Dan, I wasn't a disciple, listen, we're supposed to be disciples. We're supposed to be teachers. We're supposed to be caretakers. We're supposed to be willing to wash the feet of other people. We're supposed to be humble. We're supposed to be peacemakers. We're supposed to learn how to forgive and to be forgiven. I would argue we're supposed to be free before God, not before government, not before the Constitution, but free and filled with the spirit of liberty before God. We should seek beauty. We should understand sadness. We should live in the world and not cloister ourselves off or live in some cave someplace and pray all alone. We're not supposed to do that. Even the hermits like me are not supposed to do that. And ultimately, we have to be okay with dying and counsel people on death, because that's part of being a minister and a disciple of Christ. And this list is not complete. The answer to the question is there somebody with a special job in the Christian faith? Well, I can only think of one, and that's Jesus. Everyone else has a job to try to emulate Jesus. That's it. That's your job. And if that means you have to be a minister to a group of people that meet over coffee and read the Bible, and that's your church every Sunday, then you need to do that. And you need to get people involved in doing that. Get your whole group involved. The time for the church is now. Not yesterday, not tomorrow. The time for the church is not scheduled by the Pope. I don't know what God the Pope worships, but I'm pretty certain it's a lowercase God, which means not real. The time to be a disciple is today. The time to be a prophet is yesterday. The time is now. So I don't know what else to say. If I get another email from a family member or a friend asking me, when are you going to do more services? My answer is, why don't you do a few? And better yet, why don't you do them off the internet with actual people, as I've been telling people to do for 2 years? Okay, get away from this thing called the internet. The internet's not evil, buddy. It's not bad. Technology's not bad. But, you know, go see some of the statements from earlier in the podcast. None of this lasts, and none of this is impregnable. So if you're putting the faith of God into a vessel called the World Wide Web, maybe you're making a mistake. Find your ministry. That is, in part, one of those messages of God, of Christ. Find your ministry. Find where you can teach the word. And if you can do that, then I would say you're doing a lot for Christ. But if your answer is you simply want to read the Bible by yourself and pray by yourself and go to a church where someone tells you what to think, you can do that as well, brothers and sisters. That's an option. And I do believe there are still churches out there, you know, worthy of calling themselves a church, but I haven't found many, maybe even none. What I have found mostly are hypocrites. What I've found mostly are people pretending to worship God when in reality, and boy, 2020 and 2021, and this year's no shocker, when in reality they were worshiping the state. In fact, the most popular religion in America, the most popular religion in America is state worship. I don't care if it takes its form in the dollar bill or the Republican-Democrat festival fetish nonsense. I don't care what form it takes, but worshiping the state is the most popular spiritual behavior in America. And I don't like calling it spiritual, but it is in a sense. I mean, spirits are involved, not the good kind. There are demons out there involved in this, but yeah, that's not about God, is it? If you like this podcast and would like to donate, you can. You can donate money. I'll use it for beer. I'll use it for hookers. I'll use it for cocaine. In the privacy of my home, right? If you have the money and you've taken care of your food, your water, your shelter, if you've made decisions that will help you ride out potentially some really hard times, if you recognize that nothing can be saved, and nothing can be, okay? In fact, before I go too deep into this, I know of some people that have been working on a crypto project. And the crypto project is designed to save people's monies after they die in such a way that the government or somebody else, whatever, can't get to them. And I would say to them what I would say to you and every crypto freak on the Death Star: nothing can be saved that's part of this world. None of it. All of it goes away. If you're an atheist, all of it goes away. If you're a Christian, all of it goes away. So none of it can be saved. You can save your soul, which is really not totally part of this world, but none of the other stuff can be saved. You can't even save your family. Your family, for whatever reason, will be washed away. You will find yourself in exile from everyone eventually. And when you die, if you're a Christian and you have faith, then maybe you'll find your way home. So if you're out there and you got $20 gorillion, if you don't know what to do with it, if you don't know what the next big crypto investment is, then why not take some of that money and donate it to good old Uncle Dan's podcast? That's assuming you made it this far. I mean, that's part of it too. I said this in the last podcast and I stick to it. If you don't make it to this point, why would you want to donate? Why would you even give a fuck? I wouldn't. Why would you? Okay? This podcast is like everything else. It will turn to dust. In whatever form, digital or otherwise, it goes away. But if you made it this far and you like the podcast and you want to support it, you can donate as much as you want to. You can donate thousands and millions. I don't care. It can help me to do the things I want to do right now, which is mostly, to be honest with you, on many days of the week, I just simply don't want to have anything to do with most of the people of this world or the world itself. And I'm not proud of it, just how I feel. So go ahead and donate. Donate billions. You don't have to. You're not required to. But if you want to, you can. You can if you want to. It doesn't matter. Anyways, for this Sunday, May the 9th, 2022, Bo Blimp Talk, have a great rest of your Sunday. And remember, you were always in exile.